broadcasting worldwide via the internet from Lakeland, Florida. This is Whitfield Radio's True Believer program. And now, here is your host, the founder and president of Whitfield Theological Seminary and senior pastor of Christ Presbyterian Church in Lakeland, Florida, Dr. Kenneth G. Talbot.
Welcome to our show, and thank you for your prayers and support of this ministry. Today we're being joined by Mr. Jerry Johnson, president and founder of NicenCouncil.com and ApologeticsGroup.com. He is also church governor or ruling elder in the Reformed Presbyterian Church General Assembly. We'll be joined by Mr. Johnson right after this break. Are you considering seminary education? Let Whitfield Theological Seminary provide your educational needs. Whitfield offers master and doctoral degree programs through distance education in ministry, theological studies, biblical counseling, and Christian education. You can complete your studies for the ministry or other church vocations in the privacy of your home in conjunction with your local church. For students who have never been to college, check out the Bachelor Divinity Degree program. Whitfield also offers lay study programs. Go to www.whitfield.edu for additional information. Remember, Whitfield offers classical Reformed theological education. Whitfield Theological Seminary, training a new generation of ministers around the world to disciple the nations in the theology of the Reformation. Today's show is Amazing Grace, History and Theology of Calvinism. Mr. Johnson, as I noted, is president and founder of NicenCouncil.com and ApologeticsGroup.com, which produced the DVD Amazing Grace, The History and Theology of Calvinism. Mr. Johnson, as noted, is a church governor, a ruling elder in the Reformed Presbyterian Church General Assembly, and does itinerant teaching ministry in a mission church as well as teaching classes both at Knox Theological Seminary and Whitfield Theological Seminary. I have had the privilege of serving on the board of NicenCouncil.com and ApologeticsGroup.com, as well as appearing in Amazing Grace and the late Great Planet Church. Mr. Johnson has a BA from Whitfield College, a Master of Arts from Whitfield Theological Seminary, a Master of Philosophy from Whitfield Theological Seminary, and is about completed with his Doctor of Ministry from Knox Theological Seminary. He is former Georgia Director of Watchman Fellowship, former Assistant Pastor of Christ Presbyterian Church, serves as a chaplain for a minor league division of the Seattle Mariners. He is a researcher, a writer, and conference speaker, and book publisher. Mr. Johnson has also produced, with his two companies, not only Amazing Grace, but a DVD entitled The Marks of the Cult, A Biblical Analysis, The Late Great Planet Church, Volume 1, The Rise of Dispensationalism, and the soon-to-be-released Beware of False Prophets, The Case Against Charles G. Finney. Mr. Johnson, it's good to have you with us as a guest on True Believer here at Whitfield Radio.
Dr. Talbot, the honor is mine.
Mr. Johnson, when did you first get the idea of a documentary on Calvinism?
You know, it's interesting because I can actually remember the time of the year. It was August and it was Florida. And how do I know that it was August? Because you're in purgatory down there. And I was sitting on the back porch at my in-law's house. And the year was 1996. And I could remember thinking, because I had been sharing some aspects of Reformed theology with a friend of mine. And this friend of mine, and I'm sure you've dealt with these people before, Dr. Talbot, most of us have, those who come to us and ask us about Calvinism, Reformed theology, they want to understand a basis and a rationale for that belief.
Yes.
And as I'm taking them through the Bible and I'm taking them through the understanding, this dear fellow, his name was Steve, and I don't remember his last name. He was a Southern Baptist. He couldn't stay focused on the issue, so it made it very difficult for him to follow systematically, logically, and consistently the argument from Scripture. And he was bouncing all over the place and kind of dealing with, well, if that's true, isn't this true, instead of dealing with really the doctrine as it was laid out in Scripture. And after I had had this confrontation with him, and confrontation is too strong of a word, this discussion with him early that morning, it was the afternoon, I was sitting there thinking, boy, you know, if it could be laid out in a systematic way, this would really be great for somebody to just sit down and have this information available. Well, I knew numerous books had been written. In fact, you and Dr. Crampton had co-authored an outstanding book, Calvinism, Hyper-Calvinism, and Arminianism. But I knew this guy, Stephen, was not a reader. And I knew a lot of the people in the churches were not readers. Picking up a book and reading was just not something they had been trained to do. I really believe in, you know, the government education they went through. But also everything in our culture kind of mitigated against them being able to sit down and read a book. Whether it was corporate America and that mentality, the fact they go to work early and get off late, by the time they get home they have little time to have dinner, spend time with the family before they're exhausted, and then they have to wake up and do it again. And the only thing that they can do in the evening after they've done all of their other work and obligations is sit down in front of the TV. And that's when I thought, you know, I've got two friends who are in video production, and a documentary that really spelled out what Calvinism was, I thought would be very helpful. So the idea came to me in 1996. I said all that to say that.
You started working on the script in 2001. What was the factor that finally got that production moving?
Okay. Well, one of my friends, because I'd shared it with one of the, out of the two friends that I had, I shared it with one that I was closer with at that time, this back to 1996, and people came up to him all the time and would have ideas for documentaries. And of course, when you're making documentaries, everybody has a good idea for documentaries. And I get emailed probably three or four ideas every week. And my friend's response had become, well, hey, you write the script for it and see if you can raise some money, and I'll get it produced. And he would say that to people to kind of, you know, see if they were really serious about it. And also, if they weren't serious, that, you know, they wouldn't bother him with projects that they thought was important.
Mm-hmm.
And so he actually said that to me. That was in 1996. And I pretty much let it lie at that point and didn't move on it, but over the next 5 years, I mentioned a few times, and I guess one time I finally said it, where this friend said, you know what, that might not be a bad idea. So I set out to start trying to raise money for it, and I was really surprised that we were able to raise, and I don't remember what the figure was, maybe, I was thinking we could raise $2,000. I think we raised anywhere from $6,000-$10,000. It was in that range.
Hmm.
And the thing that kind of blew me away, so that was just awesome, was just about everybody I approached, and I only approached people I knew, people I had credibility with, and I told them what my vision was, and I would get a check sometimes for $1,000 on the spot.
Oh, my.
And sometimes $500, sometimes $100. So that's kind of really what got the ball rolling, was I saw that with the people I had spoken to, and I think even Whitfield Theological Seminary gave $500 to the project, did it not?
Yes, we did.
Yeah. So, I mean, everybody I knew, I also found out, Dr. Talbot, how small of a sphere of influence I had. I didn't know many people, but I knew a lot of people in the Westminster Presbytery, that was in the PCA, and then a couple of other folks, good brothers and sisters in the Lord, and went to them and asked them, and, you know, praise the Lord, every single one of them gave something.
What was involved then in the research and writing of the script?
Well, you know, I often tell people, because it was 2000, oh, That would have come up when we had our last conversation, October 2001, and 2001 is when my friend said, "Hey, let's move on this." And by February of 2002, we did our first interview with Dr. Joe Moorcraft. And what I had to do, so that goes back to 2002. The DVD was not released until 2004. I really did a lot of research, probably the first year and a half, 2 years. I read over 40 books, I don't know how many articles, and a lot of times what I was looking for is the most succinct soundbite, something that would be very short and but very powerful, that would lock into somebody's brain, and they would have to intellectually and spiritually deal with it.
That's so excellent.
It was a lot of writing, a lot of research. Probably the most trying thing was going out and doing the interviews was great. I love that. Interviewing Dr. R.C. Sproul, what an awesome man. Interviewing Dr. D. James Kennedy, I still remember I was almost in a state of euphoria after that interview because that man was such a class act.
Yes.
Interviewing Dr. Tom Askell with the Southern Baptist Founders Conference, a true gentleman. Interviewing Dr. Tom Nettles up at Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, that man is just full of grace. Walter Bowie was probably one of my favorites. And I often tell people, Pastor Bowie so connected with people in his interviews, and the funny thing is he was so terrified about doing the interviews. He kept telling me, "Jerry, I don't know if I'm worthy to be on this project." And I said to him, "Brother, we wouldn't have asked you if we didn't think you were worthy. And God wouldn't have worked it out so you could be here if he didn't think you were worthy."
Yes.
And quite frankly, none of us are worthy when it comes to the gospel of the Lord Jesus, but we go forward anyway. So, and that's not to leave anybody else out. As you know, I often refer to Dr. Joe Moorcraft as the world's biggest cuddly teddy bear. He's, again, just a great interview.
Yeah.
Just about everybody we interviewed, it was a wonderful, wonderful time. And so, but the most difficult thing, Dr. Talbot, was coming back to my office with those interviews and having to watch them and transcribe. I didn't transcribe each and every section. I looked for the sound bite. Well, sometimes the sound bite was two sentences, and then the person that was being interviewed would say a paragraph or two of something else that was not pertinent, and then connect it back to the two sentences above. And when you have to sit there and listen and re-listen and transcribe and write it all down, and then figure out a way where in the interview process I can let the editor know where to find the sentence up here and the paragraph down there.
Right.
It took me months, and I mean months. And even though I loved every one of those gentlemen, there was times I got tired of hearing their voice. One in particular who I'm talking with right now. Because I listened to your interviews I don't know how many times. But, you know, once it was done, you know, then I already had a general outline for the script, and I just, you know, would pray every time before I started writing. There were times I would have to get up for 2 weeks and I couldn't write anything because my brain was dead. And then I'd come back, but I'd always go back to the beginning and start reading all the way through it so I could get the mindset back. And then I would take those transcribed interviews and insert it into the script. And I'll never forget, if I can let you know of a compliment I was paid. When I wrote the section on total depravity, I would send out a section of it to different people because I wanted them to check the theological as well as the grammatical content. And I sent the section on total depravity to Dr. D. James Kennedy. And he wrote me a letter back and simply said, "That is the best explanation of total depravity I have ever read in my life."
Oh, that's wonderful.
And I sat there and I was like, "Wow, you must not have read too many definitions of total depravity." I'm saying that tongue-in-cheek. But that was just a wonderful... Dr. Tom Askell said, you know, in the history section when he read that. He said, it's fascinating how you just inserted all those in. And I've got to tell you, Dr. Talbot, I'm not claiming inspiration of the Holy Spirit, but I sure do believe that there was some guidance there, because I'm not a great writer.
We'll return with Mr. Jerry Johnson of NicenCouncil.com and ApologeticsGroup.com after this break.
Parents, are you looking for a college to send your children to in the near future? Hi, I'm Dr. Randall Talbot, the Executive Vice President and Academic Dean of Whitfield College. Let me share with you why I think you should consider Whitfield College. First, Whitfield brings a Christian college education home to you. We are a distant learning online institution. Second, Whitfield provides a biblical worldview college education. Third, affordability. Because we are a distance learning institution, we can provide a high academic education that you can afford. The average tuition for most online colleges is $300 or more per credit hour. At Whitfield, we charge $80 per credit hour. Fourth, graduates from Whitfield College are highly educated in the majors that we provide. We have graduates that have entered graduate schools all across the country in various different fields. Institutions like the University of Massachusetts of North Dartmouth, Liberty University Law School, and various seminaries. If you would like further information, you may visit the Whitfield College website at whitfieldcollege.org, or you may call the college offices at 863-683-7899. I am looking forward to hearing from you.
And we're back with Mr. Jerry Johnson of NicenCouncil.com and ApologeticsGroup.com. Mr. Johnson, how much opposition did you run into about this documentary? Perhaps it was not something that would actually be able to be sold to customers that would carry the message that you're talking about.
Well, I mean, there were some naysayers, one in particular, who just did not believe that something with that much theological content, as well as, I guess, more of the doctrinal emphasis, they just did not believe that, you know, people were going to sit there and watch it. Dr. Talbot, do remember, when I started this project, my objective was a 55-minute documentary.
Right.
And I realized rather quickly that I would not only do injustice to the topic if I kept it at 55 minutes, but I may end up with such a brief presentation that I may cause more problems than I solve.
Mm.
And before long, it was a two-hour production, then 3 hours, then 3.5 hours, then 4.5 hours. And I mean, it got up to over 100 pages, and double space. I do everything single space, basically because of Al Gore's influence. I'm trying to save paper. I'm joking. That's a joke. But anyway, I do single space. So, I mean, it was rather lengthy. And, you know, I had a couple of friends of mine say that they just didn't think it would sell. In fact, one was quite adamant about it. And, you know, he's been pleasantly surprised at how many have sold to date.
Hmm. What was the objective of the documentary in your mind?
Well, of course, I had a couple of objectives. One is, I am thoroughly convinced that Calvinism is the gospel. And I believe that the church's drift into Arminianism and semi-Pelagianism, and today I believe we see the roots of that in the modernist and postmodernist and the emerging church movement.
Yes.
User-friendly God, openness or open theism. I really believe that if we want to see true awakening, call it revival, call it reformation, if we really want to see this in our churches first, and then our country, we must, in our hearts and minds, put God back on the throne. and take man off.
Yes.
So my objective was for Christians who have what I call a Stay Puft Marshmallow view of God. I wanted to give them and let them understand that the God of the Bible is a lot bigger than their theology, their preaching, their prayers, their teaching, and their worship is leading them to believe. I also wanted to present an apologetic for Calvinism. Now, some people may say, in fact, I had a young lady write me this week, well, my position is just the Bible and you follow John Calvin. And I responded back to her, call it Calvinism, Augustinianism, Paulinism, or fruit on the bottom, strawberry yogurt. I don't care. If it's the gospel, it's the gospel. And the moniker or the label I put on it is not relevant. In fact, she was kind of blown away when I told her that John Calvin did not endorse the 5 points of Calvinism, because he was dead when they were drafted. So she didn't know that. She kind of had it in her mind that Calvin sat down one day and wrote out his theology in 5 points. And of course, you and I both know that's not what happened.
Right.
So that was the two of the objectives. And then, and this is something we deal with in the third part of the documentary. Part one was on the history of the debate. And I did that because I wanted to give a context, a definitive context to the word free will and the word election or predestination. And I felt that it was necessary to go through the history to see how these words unfolded within the theological debate. And then part two, we actually take the 5 points of Arminianism and put them on trial. It'd be better stated, we take the 5 points of Calvinism and put them on trial. And we go against the 5 points of Arminianism, and we kind of do it in a courtroom, that's where it was actually shot, to see whether or not these things are biblical. But part three was, how do we as Calvinists share the gospel? Because that's been a concern of mine, and I believe a concern of many Calvinists. For somebody who was a flaming Arminian like me, and I was Southern Baptist, now for people to understand, I was saved in a Pentecostal church, so I was a spirit-filled flaming Arminian. Then I became a Southern Baptist. Now I was a much better organized flaming Arminian. And when I was a Southern Baptist, I went out on outreach with my church every Monday night, seeing new people that had visited the church, passing out gospel tracts, sharing the gospel wherever we went. I used to keep, the four spiritual laws in my pocket and hand them out to people. And I really believed in evangelism because I know the Bible taught evangelism. And when I became a Calvinist, I didn't want to stop evangelizing. The problem was I had only been trained to evangelize like an Arminian. And now there was this conflict between what I saw as the biblical view of the sovereignty of God and free grace and how I was conducting evangelism. And I didn't know how to rectify that. And I just assumed all throughout the video, as I was writing it, that many of the things that I went through, a lot of other people are probably going through them also.
Yes.
I just pretty much figured I was your average run-of-the-mill Joe Pewsitter. And so I wrote it with myself in mind. And so part three, we dealt with the issue of how can we evangelize without compromising the sovereignty of God. So those were really the three objectives of the documentary.
And what did you hope to accomplish in the Christian community itself when this production was completed?
And I would say that would be it, to get the average Christian to realize that our God is sovereign. He is not some weak, impotent God who sits in heaven wringing his hands, hoping men will see the wisdom of his plan and stop sinning and follow him. I want them to see that our God is the dread sovereign of the universe, the one who declares the beginning from the ending, the author and finisher not only of our faith, but the author and finisher of history. And so that was my objective, or I guess what I hope to accomplish within the Christian community. They've got to see this, or we're going to continue to worship an idol as far as the masses of the churches go.
Were there any negatives that you considered while making this production or after the production was set forth?
Negatives as in things that I wish we could change?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, and you know, there were some aspects that I look back on them now. Most of them, ironically, appear at the end of Section 2 in the Consequence of Ideas. And that was, and I'm not trying to take anything away from anybody, but there was a scene in there dealing with MTV Music Awards. And that's all I'll say about it, but I look back on it, and I do understand what was attempting to be said, because I did not have full control over the production. I was the executive producer, but I wasn't directly the producer. And although I have a large say-so, I did have to acquiesce to other people who were working on the video. And there was just that one scene from the MTV Music Awards that I didn't believe needed to be in it then, and I believe doesn't need to be in it now. But that's kind of water under the bridge. And then there were a couple of parts in the third section that, going back and looking at it now, I think we could have maybe said it better or worded it better. But, you know, ironically, and I got to tell you, I had an author tell me one time, at one point, you just have to stop writing and turn your script over to the publisher.
Mm-hmm.
You know who told me that?
No.
Dave Hunt. No kidding. Wisdom from Dave Hunt. And I realized, you know, I could probably go to the script today and make changes to it.
Hey, isn't he that accountant guy?
Yes, he is.
Okay.
And I tell you what, he's written a lot of books that sell quite well.
Yes, he does.
Unfortunately, I mean, other than the basic fundamentals of the Christian faith, I don't agree with any of his predictions or eschatology or even his main theology. But anyway.
Our guest is Mr. Jerry Johnson of NicenCouncil.com, ApologeticsGroup.com, and we'll continue with our show after this break.
Hi, this is Phil Mason from the website Theology Today Apologetic Ministries. It's a website from a Reformed point of view that deals with expressions of Christianity that aren't Reformed. Movements such as the Word of Faith and the Signs and Wonders, the Mormons, Jehovah's Witnesses, Roman Catholicism, as well as hyperpreterism. With over 400 articles, the Theology Today Apologetic Ministries podcast, as well as videos, I trust that you'll find everything that you need to make a sound decision whether or not to follow these movements. Thanks for stopping by. And now back to True Believer with Dr. Kenneth Halbit on the Whitfield Radio Network.
And we're back with Mr. Jerry Johnson. Jerry, you've nearly sold about 51,000 sets of Amazing Grace. Are you surprised at those numbers?
You know, I've got to confess, Dr. Talbot, I have no standard by which to judge, because that was my first DVD and it's still selling. I mean, today alone, I bet you we sold 70 copies of Amazing Grace.
Mm.
That's what surprises me. Is when I look back week after week after week, how many have sold.
A lot of these have been sold in churches, too, haven't they?
Churches, I mean, you wouldn't believe some of the deals we've got coming. I just signed a contract with a distributor in the Philippines.
Mm.
They're going to be distributing it down there.
Wonderful.
A Christian warehouse. I've signed another one with a group in Australia. We just had a Spanish version of Amazing Grace come out. So we've got it in Española now.
It's great.
And so there are a lot of good things happening. But let me tell you this story. I was down in Fort Lauderdale, must have been around 2006, I believe. Might have been the winter of 2007. So it was either summer of 06 or the winter of 07. And we were doing interviews for Late Great Planet Church. And one of the guys we interviewed happened to have been one of, and I cannot remember his title. He had something to do with sales and marketing for Baker Books. And this was back in the 80s, maybe early 90s. And he had gotten his seminary degree and was actually teaching at Knox Seminary. And anyway, so I'm sitting there talking with him. And he says, oh, man, yeah, I saw Amazing Grace. That's incredible. And he said, how are sales going? And I said, well, you know, to date we've sold 17,000. And the dear man just about fell out of his chair. And he said, well, who do you have distributing it? And I said, you know, I kind of hate to tell you this, but my whole downstairs of my house is converted into my office, so for all intents and purposes, they're coming out of my basement. And he said, no, seriously, who is your distributor? And I said, brother, you don't get it. We don't have a distributor. And I set up wholesale accounts, but I'm doing everything through my website, through Amazon, and wholesale distributors. And he about doubly fell out of his chair. And he said, do you understand that in the Christian market, you sell 1,000 copies of anything, that's good. If you sell 5,000 copies, you're a bestseller. If you sell 10,000 copies, you are loved by the publishing house. And I said, well, yeah, that's what we've got. So periodically I talk with him and tell him, hey, we're up to 51,000. And he's like, wow, that is just incredible.
Yes, so, it is very much.
Those figures, you know, when you look at how many we've sold, and then also how many have watched it.
Yes.
Because, you know, I get people all the time that, hey, I want to show this in my church over the next, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 Sundays. Do we need a special license? And I always email them back and say, if you can rent out a football stadium and show it to 70,000 people at one time, go for it.
Yes.
So we don't have a copyright as far as viewing it. You know, there's a copyright that you can't make illegal copies, but as far as viewing it, show it to as many people as you can.
How many copies were sold the first year?
The first year, well, that's, if I gave you the first full calendar year,
right,
it would be 12,000.
That's just amazing.
Yeah.
What are the best projections, you think, for the DVD over the next 10 years?
Well, that is kind of hard to say. One of the good things is, with the exception of that MTV statement, the video's really not dated. And I think most people are going to forget that MTV statement. That's, you know, one of my concerns among many with that MTV section being in there is it dates the video.
Yes.
And I don't like to date my videos. I want them to be able to be watched 20 years from now and still be just as relevant. So my projections for the next 10 years, you know, they often say the longer it's out, the less it'll sell. 2009 was one of the best years we had had.
That's incredible.
So, I mean, 2010 has started off to be a banner year. You know, I don't know. These economists keep talking about a double-dip recession, which I hope they're wrong about. So you try to remain optimistic and remember that, you know, you did a video on the sovereignty of God, so when it comes to the economy, you got to trust the sovereignty of God. So that's one of the drawbacks. If I ever complained, my wife was like, hey, aren't you the one that did all the writing and researching for that DVD on the sovereignty of God? Yeah, thank you, dear. Thank you, Lord, for putting her in my life.
But you have something that I think is not dated, and I think we'll see it around for the next 20, 30 years. I'm not sure that it'll ever run out of time for people buying it. New converts to Christianity coming into the Presbyterian and Reform-type churches, whether they're independent, Baptist, Presbyterian, whatever the case. You've got something that is a training tool for them, and people who are converting over from Arminian-type theology to Calvinism. I just don't think it will go away. I think you have something that is almost timeless in that sense.
Well, and I hope you're right. And I hope you're right, not just because I want, you know, I mean, this is also my business, but just for the sake of the furthermen of the kingdom of Christ. I hope people continue to realize that our Arminian theology of the past utterly failed us.
Right. We're going to take a break, and we will return with Mr. Jerry Johnson.
Do you enjoy reading theological papers and articles on the Reformed faith? Then go to Theology Explained website and browse through the various articles, position papers, and research materials that are available. While there, you can participate in blogging on various topics of interest and interacting with others who are interested in the same subject matter. Go to TheologyExplained.com. TheologyExplained.com. And become a part of their active community.
Mr. Johnson, I'm sure you've gotten some interesting feedback over the years. Would you share some of that feedback, especially the positive responses? And then, if you would, tell us some of the negative responses.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, some of the positive responses have been phenomenal. I can remember one dear man, Jeremy Conrad, who was a member of the Church of the Nazarene, and I have periodic contact with him, but he has just been on fire for the sovereignty of God. He came out of a total Arminian background and was challenged by a friend of his to sit down and watch Amazing Grace. And I've got to remember how his testimony went. He sat down and started watching it, and watched it straight through in one night.
Oh, my.
The next night, he watched it through again. And this guy contacted me and just was telling me, kind of in fragmented sentences, you know, what had happened to him. And I asked him to write an endorsement. And I believe if you go on our website, you'll see the endorsement there. But it is just fascinating. He just has bought numerous copies of Amazing Grace, and he's handed them out to his saved friends and lost friends. He also transcribed the whole DVD and put it into a workbook so his wife, who was still Arminian, could go through it point by point.
Wow.
And so this guy was just enamored with it. A couple other ones, Dr. Tom Askell had been at Dr. John MacArthur's Shepherd Conference out in California, and the founders had a booth there, and a guy came up to him and said, he was a missionary, and said, "Dr. Askell, I have watched Amazing Grace every day for the last 30 days. I learn something every time I watch it."
Hmm.
Now, that's an extreme example, and I don't know if the guy was using hyperbole or not. He meant he watched the whole thing all the way through, you know, which I kind of doubt, because then he wouldn't have a life. But, you know, the point is, the guy was just blown away by it. He had never really understood or experienced the sovereignty of God. But one that stands out in my mind the most was, I had a pastor of a Wesleyan church call me up, Tim, and I'll never forget, a Thursday morning, and he said, "Is this Brother Johnson?" And I said, "Yes, it is." And he said his name, and he said, "I'm at this Wesleyan church," and he said, "I want to let you know, I've watched Amazing Grace now 5 or 6 times, and I went out and I bought A.W. Pink's book, The Sovereignty of God, and I was wondering if you would spend a few moments praying with me, because Sunday, I'm going to tell my board that I've become a Calvinist." And I prayed with him, and I said, "Pastor, what do you think their response is going to be?" And he says, "Well, in all honesty, their response is probably going to be, 'What's a Calvinist?'"
Yes.
And I said, "Well, will you stay on staff at the church?" And he said, "No, I will tell them I have to resign. They will probably ask me not to, but they don't understand that for the sake of honor and integrity, I have to resign. The Wesleyan Church does not embrace the sovereignty of God as I now believe it."
Yes.
And so that was an interesting one. There was also a group of Pentecostals that started a Pentecostal Calvinistic website. I don't know if it's still up and running, but it was as a result of watching Amazing Grace, the History and Theology of Calvinism.
That's incredible.
Then I had a minister within the Christian Church's Disciple of Christ who watched Amazing Grace. He bought, we recommend at the back of the video, recommended reading list. He bought Dr. Lorraine Bettner's book, The Reformed Doctrine of Predestination.
Yes.
The last time I talked to him, he had gotten accepted to be a student at Westminster Theological Seminary.
Mm.
So I guess the whole thing kind of stuck with him. So we
heard
many wonderful testimonies, people that have been impacted with just really a higher view of God. Well, let me share one other thing, and this one was really awesome. It was a Baptist church, a Southern Baptist church, and I don't remember the pastor's name, but he was a Calvinist. There probably were a few in his congregation that leaned in his direction, but most of his congregation was fairly non-committal. And he got Amazing Grace, and he got the study guide that myself and my wife put together, and he showed it to his church on Wednesday nights. And he said, Jerry, the most interesting thing happened. There was a lady in our church, single lady, probably late 50s, early 60s. She had been a member of that church for 30-something years. And the pastor told me I cannot remember one time in the years he had been there that she ever came to him and had a question about the Bible. It just never came up. Well, about halfway through Amazing Grace, she all of a sudden starts calling and emailing him with questions. Not just questions on the DVD or the sovereignty of God, but now theological questions, asking, what did Jonathan Edwards mean when he said this? And finally, he asked her one day, what's gotten into you? I've been here for 10 years. I didn't even know if you ever read the Bible. And she said to him, Pastor, I didn't. And he said, why not? And he said, because my view of God, the Arminian view, was not very impressive. And when I started realizing that God was sovereign, God was over all history, that's a God I had to know. I had to know his word. Before, I didn't care. I always thought that was an interesting story.
Yeah, I remember at the conference, one of the conferences you had, I had a fellow come up to me and corner me, and he said, I have a bone to pick with you. And I said, okay. And he said, I watched that Amazing Grace DVD, and he said, one of the things that I got probably the most angry over is when you looked in the camera and said, well, Calvinism can't be broken because it's simply the Bible. And he said, I'm a Methodist. And I said, oh, you want to bet? I'll prove to you. He said, I went to my Bible, and he said, next thing I know, I'm a converted Calvinist teaching in a Methodist church. He said, they threw me out a month ago.
That'll work. That'll
he said, so I wanted to thank you for getting me thrown out of my church. I said, you're welcome. Have you received any testimonials concerning conversions? People actually writing and saying they've been converted, one to Christ?
Yes, absolutely. And, I mean, you know, we don't go fishing for those. That's not our objective. People contact us on their own. But, you know, I had a man that had been, I guess for lack of a better term, kind of a quasi-Christian, you know, a compartmentalized Christian. His wife was not saved, and he asked her if she would sit down and go through Amazing Grace with him, even though she wasn't a Christian, and he wasn't a Calvinist. So they went down through it together. By the time they got done, he had changed his view on the sovereignty of God, and she had received Christ, and he just called up celebrating and thanking and praising the Lord for the work that was done on that production. So, I mean, those are some type of the conversion experiences that we've heard.
That's incredible. Negative responses.
You know, the funny thing is, and I often tell people, the first 3 years, which would have been 2004 to 2007, I checked, trust me, I checked every week to see if anybody had left a negative review any place on the internet about Amazing Grace. And even today, you're going to be a little more hard-pressed to find them. You can find a few out there. You read the negative reviews and you wonder if they really watched the video. But It was about 2007 before I saw the first one. I used to tell people prior to then, I said, you know, 3 years of this documentary being out, 25, 30,000 copies sold, no negative reviews. There's only two possibilities. One, the script was inspired, infallible, and inerrant. Or two, Arminian academia is dead. And I believe it's probably the latter. Arminian
yes.
academia is dead. But as far as the negative feedback goes, most of it is there were a few personality issues. Why did you have this guy on? Why did you have that guy on? You know, and then a couple of segments like the MTV, that's the one we've gotten the most complaints about. And then, you know, the few negative reviews that have popped up, but these are people that have made free will their idol, and they don't want to surrender it. So, for the most part, no. We have not received a lot. I would even say, compared to the positive, it's been the Jolly Green Giant next to Sprout, you know.
Speaking of Arminians, why didn't you interview any Arminians for Amazing Grace?
You know, and that's a very good question, because when I do a documentary, Amazing Grace, Marks of the Cult, Late Great Church, or our upcoming one on Charles Finney, I get asked, why don't you get the other side? And I try to explain to them, that's not the objective of what I'm doing. I'm doing a one-sided production. First off, Arminianism had enough of a voice, because I believe Arminianism is fallen man's default setting. We're Arminian by nature. Secondly, because we're Arminian by nature, it's already assumed. They don't need to hear the Arminian side, they need to hear the biblical side. They live with Arminianism every day of their lives. And whether that mutates it into a theological expression of free will or a political expression of free choice, Arminianism is with us everywhere we turn in our fallen world. So that's one reason. The second reason is, my intention was to present Calvinism. If I interviewed an Arminian, it would be for the sole purpose of him giving a soundbite and then us tearing that soundbite apart. That would be our objective. Now, what intelligent person is going to agree to be interviewed on something like that? And I would not deceive somebody and tell them that we're presenting both sides and then not do it. So the best thing to do, whether I'm doing a documentary on dispensationalism or Charles Finney or Calvinism, if you want to present your side, make your own video.
We'll return with Mr. Jerry Johnson after this break.
A Puritan's Mind is a website dedicated to the gospel of Jesus Christ and the glory of God. Located at www.apuritansmind.com, its purpose is to help those visitors, over 50 million since 1998, to enjoy God and His gracious gospel of redemption through Jesus Christ. It's called A Puritan's Mind because it houses one of the largest selections of writings from the 17th century, covering Christian authors such as Alexander Henderson, Samuel Rutherford, Jeremiah Burroughs, and a whole host of Westminster ministers of the Puritan age. But that's not all. There are sections on the website on church history, historical theology, and doctrinal aspects covering justification, the doctrines of grace, family worship, Christian stewardship, and much, much more. A Puritan's Mind has even reached out over into the Reformed book market with Puritan publications. We have published over a dozen works, including The Covenant of God by Thomas Blake, and one of the most popular introductions to covenant theology called A Simple Overview of Covenant Theology by Dr. Matthew McMahon. All works are available in digital formats as well. You can even acquire an all-in-one special DVD that contains many out-of-print works, sermons, and books from the Puritans and Reformers. Visit us at www.apuritansmind.com for more information, and do all to the glory of God.
Mr. Johnson, what is your favorite part of the documentary?
Oh, my favorite part. Actually, I'm going to give you two. And the first one is really in an interview question that I asked for Dr. Kennedy. And I've probably, out of every segment, gotten more response from Dr. Kennedy's little play on words with the word all. You say that all the time. No, you don't say it all the time. You know, and he does this little word, this little game, and he goes on for about 2 minutes. Well, I'm sitting right in front of him, and I am sitting here having to bite my lip. I have my hand over my mouth. He starts smiling because he knows I am trying not to laugh. And that man was such a professional, he didn't miss a beat, but when he cracked that smile, I just thought it was so classic. So that was one of my favorite moments. And I got to tell you, this is just another little story. When I asked Dr. Kennedy to be in the documentary, you know, I thought, man, I'm going to go down to Fort Lauderdale and get 15 minutes of the guy's time. And we go into his studio, and he sits down, and I had 55 questions. Now, I wasn't going to ask him all 55. I went to five that I was going to highlight and ask him because I wanted to get him out quickly. So I started out with question number 23, and he goes, well, wait a minute, you didn't do question number one. And I said, well, I thought I would just ask you. He goes, no, I want to answer them all.
There you go.
And so I'm like, okay, well, an hour and 45 minutes into the interview, he looks down at his watch. We have one question left. And he goes, what time is it? He says it to one of his staff people, and they tell him the time, and he goes, uh-oh, I'm dead meat. And I said, what's the matter? He goes, I'm supposed to meet my wife at the restaurant in 5 minutes. And I said, well, we got one question left. Do you want to do it? And he goes, yeah, let's do it. So we did the one question. He was done. He ripped the microphone off and said, I got to go, Jerry. And he was out the door. So I enjoyed being in his presence and just dealing with him. And when he found out that I had named my third son Benjamin Warfield, I think I really endeared myself to him because his view of Knox Seminary was to be like old Princeton. But really, the play on words with all and every was one of my favorite parts. Probably one of the best things that I thought was that I wrote in the script was in the section on evangelism, where we're dealing with the fact that per capita in the church today, or in our culture today, we have more professing Christians, more people professing to be born again, both numerically and percentage-wise. And the statement that is made is, with all of these numbers, with all of these people claiming to be Christians, why in the world is the church so impotent to deal with some of the issues that are confronting our society? Abortion, homosexuality, divorce, violence, drugs, alcoholism. You would think that you should walk out on the streets and it'd just be one big giant worship service. Instead, it's debauchery. And the thing that I wrote, and I'll never forget working on this paragraph, and I thank God for it, but here was the answer. In part, the answer may be that instead of seeking the elect by presenting food for the sheep, the preached word of God, which the Holy Spirit uses, convict the elect of their sins, many are seeking the bottom line, numbers. And since numbers have often become the standard by which to judge a ministry's success, and not wanting to offend and drive people away, much of the modern church is no longer preaching the sinfulness of man or the bloody offense of the cross. As a result, the church is offering the wrong kind of food. Instead of food for the sheep, much of today's preaching and evangelism is food for goats, and goats are now everywhere.
That's good, yeah.
I can just remember when I got done with that paragraph thinking, that's exactly the way I wanted to say it.
What have people considered as important points that have challenged their thinking?
I think probably the two biggest issues, or really, one would be the aspect that in the modern church, we have a tendency to think of history as worthless. And we don't really consider church councils, creeds, confessions. Those were all written by a bunch of old dead guys who probably had too much starch in their shirts. And so history is really not relevant to us. And one of the things I've heard over and over is, my church is now interested in church history.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to make it clear that, you know, when we reference creeds, confessions, councils, and I love the quote from R.C. Sproul. I'll never forget when I read that quote in his book. Well, it wasn't his book. It was a book edited by Michael Scott Horton called The Agony of Deceit, What Some TV Preachers Are Really Teaching. And I read that book in probably 1991. I'd only been a Christian for 2 years. And I came across that quote from R.C. Sproul, and I didn't know who he was. But the quote was so profound and seemed to be so full of wisdom. And I think I could still remember it verbatim. I'm going to give it a shot here. Church history is never a rule, but it is a guide. If you come across an interpretation, or if you come up with an interpretation that has escaped the notice of every other Christian for the last 2,000 years, or it was an interpretation that was championed by a universally recognized heretic, the chances are pretty good that you had better abandon your interpretation. And I just thought that was so wise, and we put that in there. I mean, you know,
that is a good statement.
Use that in Marks of a Cult and Late Great Planet Church.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that the quote is so full of wisdom. So I've used it 3 times, and I don't think I'm using it in Beware of False Prophets against Charles Finney.
No, but I'm sure you'll use it again.
I'm sure I'll use it again, but I really liked it, and I've had quite a few pastors and Christians themselves saying, you know, I went out and bought this book on systematic theology, or I went out and bought this book on church history. And, you know, it's funny, the one I recommend to a lot of people if they've never read a lot of church history is that one you gave me years ago by Howard Boss.
Yes.
You know, I tell them that's a good, simple place to start. Good little book on church history, and you won't go wrong with it. I don't remember the title, but it was a good little book. And so that's one of the aspects. And then I got to remember exactly, points that challenge people's thinking. Of course, the total depravity section, I think, by the grace of God, it was stated so clearly and succinctly, not only by what I wrote, but by what was added by others, especially some of the people that gave commentary. A lot of people said, you know, when I saw that and I realized, wait a minute, an unrepentant, unregenerate child of the devil is dead in their sins and trespasses. Given the opportunity to choose between good and evil, God and Satan, what will the unregenerate, unrepentant child of the devil always choose? Death, sin, hell, the grave, hater of God. They will always choose evil. They will not choose good. They will always choose the devil in his kingdom, not God in his gospel. And when they see that, then all of a sudden, election starts making sense. And then when election makes sense, the atonement starts to make sense.
Yes.
So those areas are where I would say we challenged a lot of people's thinking. I don't know, Kim, if we accomplished that with the evangelism section. I wanted to, but I don't know if we did.
There's been a lot of talk about Amazing Grace, too. Can you tell us more about that project?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I actually conceived of that product almost immediately after Amazing Grace was done. And what I wanted to do was take the 5 solas of the Reformation and explain them doctrinally as they were a response to what the Roman Church had been teaching through the medieval period, and why the Reformers came out with the 5 solas, if you will, and then kind of show how our modern church has acquiesced much of the Reformation back to Rome, in that slowly but surely we are abandoning the solas of the Reformation. So I've actually talked with a lot of people. I've drawn up an outline. Dr. Ken Gentry and I have bounced some ideas. We're collecting material for it. I've got some incredible scholars already lined up to be interviewed for it. So we're going to have some classic theologians, some really good historians, and we're going to really tear this thing up, Lord willing.
We're going to take a break, and we'll return with Mr. Jerry Johnson.
Are you looking for a book publisher who is committed to reprinting some of the finest Christian literature ever published, with a focus on the 17th and 18th century English and American Puritans? Then you are looking for the Northampton Press, the publishing wing of Don Kistler Ministries, Incorporated. There are literally thousands of books from that period that were not reprinted after their initial publication. Titles that honor Christ, exalt God, and call believers to live lives that are worthy of Him and pleasing to Him. John MacArthur says, quote, "The Northampton Press is the most promising and yet experienced new publisher I know of. Its commitment to Orthodox Christian literature is much needed today. Expect publications that take theology and scripture seriously. I highly recommend this effort," unquote. The Northampton Press is hoping to produce 6 to 10 new titles each year. The latest release is A Dialogue Between a Catholic Priest and a Protestant by the highly regarded Puritan scholar and preacher Matthew Poole. Visit the Northampton Press website at northamptonpress.org. There's only one H in Northampton. There you will find all the books currently available. The books listed on the website are discounted for individuals. northamptonpress.org.
Mr. Johnson, where can our listeners go to purchase these materials and other materials that you handle?
Well, the best place to go would be to... Actually, we've got three websites going right now. One is NiceneCouncil.com, and that's NiceneCouncil.com, and of course, ApologeticsGroup.com. But recently, a good friend of mine, who is the president for the Center for Reformed Theology and Apologetics, we're working together now on a joint venture, and my bookstore is now his bookstore. So if you go to reformed.org, which is the number one Reformed website in the world, you'll see a little link on there for check out our new web store. And if you click on that, even though it says Center for Reformed Apologetics, that is still the NiceneCouncil.com and ApologeticsGroup.com bookstore. So you can go to either of those places. And you can also call us if you don't like going through a website. We have a toll-free telephone number, 866-735-9582. I'll say it again, 866-735-9582. Or you can mail us a check or money order. With your order, you can go to the website and get the address and just add the shipping and handling.
Mr. Johnson, I want to thank you for appearing on True Believer, and we look forward to having you back on our program to discuss other DVDs that you have produced.
Thank you, Dr. Talbot, and God bless.
I want to thank our audience for listening to True Believer. Please let others know about this current podcast and past podcasts that are archived on our website. If possible, please either register as a member on Whitfield Radio site or become a fan of Whitfield Radio on Facebook. May God bless and keep you until our next show.
You've been listening to Whitfield Radio. Whitfield Radio is a division of Whitfield College and Theological Seminary. Music is provided by our friend, Dr. Phil Kagi, and we encourage you to visit his website at philkagi.com, philkagi.com. This is Dr. Bill Sullivan saying thank you for joining us and check out our website for the next scheduled show. Have a blessed day.
If you need to call